Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. It was announced today that Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad will serve as the acting education minister. Of course, this comes a week after Dr. Mazli Malik stepped down as education minister in that post. Now, there's been a lot of discussion surrounding these two men and what they bring to the role. Perhaps tonight it's time to step away from the personalities and instead take a closer look at the process of education reform and the challenges that come with it. Now, here to provide us some insight into the work that goes on behind the scenes, we have from the Office of the Education Minister, Liew Swet Lee, former policy officer for Dr. Mazli Malik. Welcome to the show, Swet Lee.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's begin a little bit with your background, because you started out with Teach for Malaysia, mm-hmm. and then you went on to do your master's in comparative education in England. For Teach for Malaysia, you were teaching in a rural school in Negeri Sembilan. Now, all of that combined, that's an impressive track record, but then how did you end up working with the Office of Mazli Malik?
Yeah, so I taught for 2 years with Teach for Malaysia in a rural school in Negeri Sembilan. And I think my understanding being a teacher in a classroom is I saw the kind of impact that I could create with the children, and I felt like this is the kind of impact that I wanted to do for my career. Mm. Moving forward, I then worked in Teach for Malaysia, the NGO, the organization, for a while before I did my master's. When I came back, so happened the election happened. And that's when I realized that this is a great opportunity to serve in a larger way in the government, and also because they were also looking for someone to join the office. So at that point, Wan Saiful was the person who recruited me. He actually sent out a vacancy.
This was Wan Saiful Wan Jan, yes, of PTPTN.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. He was the advisor to the minister at that point. There was a vacancy and they were looking for a research and policy officer. And I interviewed for the role, yeah. And I came to the office because of that. So that was in May 2018.
Can I very quickly ask you to clarify? So why did you? So this role is a political appointee role, right? So this is under the minister's office when you were there with Dr. Mazli. Why did you choose this route? Why not go through, you know, the civil service route if you wanted to make sure that you were part of the education system?
Yeah. So I think I've always known that the greatest impact in terms of policy will be at the government level. Instead of NGO or just being in the classroom, it's going to be at the policy-making level. But I also realised that it's actually really impossible to join the civil service at a different level other than being a teacher. So especially in the Ministry of Education, you have to start from being a teacher, and there's the grading system, right, DG41. And you kind of move your way up and you get to the policy making level, especially at a higher level when you're like 50-something.
It takes years,
so,
right?
So when you're like 30 and you just came back and you want to do something, like there's not a lot of route to enter the government.
Okay.
So when this opportunity came about, I realized that this is probably the best way. And also, it's also quite a high level as well. So it's probably the best way to look at the entire system from a very broad perspective.
Sure.
I wonder if you, because, you know, and I'm assuming that you did come across the blueprint, the education blueprint that was produced under the Barisan National Government. I mean, it's often said that Malaysia is very good at producing beautifully designed blueprints that are actually quite coherent, but they don't necessarily get implemented. Now, I mean, were you, what was your take on the education blueprint? Did you think you'd fall into the situation of just producing wonderful, catalogues of ideas that would never see the light of day?
Yeah. So we were actually really mindful about this because of what you said, right? I studied a blueprint thoroughly before I joined the office, because as a research and policy officer, basically we had to understand all the programs that were run before. And the blueprint is actually a really impressive document, right? Both the English and the Malay versions. But we realized also very quickly the challenges of implementing the blueprint. When we entered, we were in the middle of it. So we were in wave two of the blueprint, and yet the progress was lacking way behind for a lot of the items in the blueprint. So definitely we saw the challenges in implementation, but we didn't want to like come up with our own blueprint as well, because then again, that defeats the purpose. Then we were
another
just going
blueprint
back to square one, right? And we were reinventing the wheel again. But that's the dilemma. How do you take something from the previous government, but also continue it, but also have new ideas into the system?
Right. Okay, so when you get into the office, I mean, perhaps describe for us something that we don't often get is the view of how the machine, the sausage making part of the of government, as it were. What exactly is the structure of a ministerial office, at least in this case, the education ministry?
Yeah. So the minister's office will have special officers, and that's normal for all ministries as well, the number of which will depend on the minister. So the minister will bring with him a team of people. And in my office, I think it's structured quite differently from the previous offices in the past, because previously, like you say, it's political appointee. They mainly do political work. Okay. But in my office, I think they realize that because we have combined the two ministries, there's a lot of work that is required in terms of research and policy. And also, it's a new government, that's a government in transition. I think we wanted to have new ideas that we wanted to inject into the system. So my office is structured, and there are three teams in my office. So there's the political team that does the political work, there's the media team, and then there's the policy team, which is us. So that's, I think, quite different from the other political offices.
Right. Okay. And presumably, you're communicating between these teams.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Were they challenges? I mean, you're all new to the game. You had to work with civil servants. Maybe begrudging your position, maybe welcoming, I don't know. Yeah. What was the feel to be in that office and try and push this through?
Yeah. So I think two main challenges, right? Number one, like a lot of us are new, for example. And not just that, a lot of us are actually from education. So 80% of my office are either academicians, lecturers, teachers, because Dr. Mazli himself was a lecturer. So he brought with him a team of people that he felt had the right intention for education. But that also means that we don't have the political acumen or the political ambition as well. And that later on became a detriment to us. But yeah, definitely we are also not civil servants. And the first, I think I would say 6 months, we had to really gain the trust of the civil servants very quickly. And that did not come immediately. That took a lot of work. Because obviously for them, and I don't blame them, right? Because every minister that comes in has their own agenda. And for the civil servants, they're there. They're there for 30 years. They are the ones doing the work.
Yeah, they have to execute policy.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So every time someone new comes in and come up with new ideas, they will either have to scrap all the work they were doing before, or, you know, it's difficult for them. So I think that distrust was very natural. And also, it's a new government. So definitely, we saw that, and we had to work really hard to build that relationship.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk a little bit about the challenges of communicating the work that you were doing in the Ministry of Education. Don't go anywhere on Consider This. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Lisa Idris with Sharad Kutin. We're chatting tonight to Liu Swit Lee, former policy officer for Dr. Mazli Malik. Now we're talking a little bit about the communication missteps that the Ministry of Education had before the break, or specifically the Minister of Education. I want to understand now in hindsight the black shoe debacle. And I know a lot has been said about this, but I want to hear from someone from within the team, because you were with him from the very beginning, yes?
Yeah.
So talk to me through that debacle. Why did that become such a fiasco? What were your thoughts?
Maybe before I start on the black shoes, let me just share a little bit the plans that we had, actually, and the plans that we wanted to communicate to people that we had. You know, we referred to the blueprint, but at the same time, we also referred to experts as well to just come up with these three main priorities that we had for the next 5 years. And the first one would be values-based education. So Dr. Mazli came from a very humanistic background, and he wanted education to be more than just academic performance. So he wanted to make sure that values like love, happiness, and mutual respect is something that all students, after having gone to school and university, will come out of. So that's values-based education. And then the second one is increasing quality in the system. So making sure that our curriculum is relevant and meaningful for every child, making sure that our educators are excellent in the classroom, making sure that we are efficient in terms of how we are spending resources and allocating resources. And finally, autonomy and accountability in the system. And I think that has been maybe missing for quite a while. Like, you know, do we actually know what the Ministry of Education is doing and how we are spending the money? So I think these are the three big ideas that we had for what we wanted to do. And the whole black shoes came up because at the first event, actually, that he was speaking as a minister, and he was sharing his ideas for education. And, you know, he was going on and on a whole long list of the kind of reforms that he wanted to create, and which includes autonomy and quality and things like that. And I think at the end of it, he also then mentioned that, hey, now that I'm a minister, actually, there's this one request that I had from a lot of parents, which is, you know, can you change the shoes to black? Because it's you know, we have to wash the shoes and it's a burden for us, especially the B40 parents. And he was like, yeah, that can be done quite easily. And that's not an issue. So he mentioned it. And instead, that became like the limelight instead of everything else that he mentioned about quality, about autonomy. So, I mean,
In hindsight, was it because that was the simplest idea to grasp?
Simplest by the media. I mean, was it a failure to recognize that if he mentioned it, mm-hmm. that somebody could run away with this idea and be much more disciplined about what you communicate and when you communicate it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think definitely that's the blunder that we had because we didn't have the experience of dealing with media, right? Or dealing with the public. So I think we were jumbling ideas together. And also there was a lot of expectations for him to have new ideas and fresh ideas immediately. And that the public expected that from the new government and also expected that from the education minister. Right. So I think ideas like autonomy is quite hard to break down. Even if it's broken down, it may not seem relevant to everyone or people may not really care about it. But the idea of black shoes is like, wow, like all of us went to school, we all wore white. But why black now? So everybody could understand the concept of it.
Right, but it did tend to trivialize his ideas. Exactly. It tended to make him sound like somebody who was interested in small things without the larger picture. And you're saying to us, he did in fact have the larger picture. Now, I know we're going to talk to some of the task force that he put together, but before that, there was this very thing. The vehicle itself for the reforms, the ministry itself, needed to be changed. And that is a story that we haven't heard much about. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the institutional reform challenges.
Yeah. So in order to really do these three priorities that we wanted in 5 years, I think we realized that, you know, we can't be introducing new policies if we don't actually know what's going on already in the system, right? So the first phase for reform is not implementing new policies, but to restructure how things are and also to really review what's currently existing, which is why we have created a task force. But at the same time as well, we also realized that there were a lot of leakages that is happening in the ministry. So whether it's financial leakages or just people who are not in the right positions in the ministry or have the right capability who are either in leadership positions in the ministry or schools or universities. So tasks like that, like you can't really share with people.
Well, what people don't realize is just how many contracts go through the education ministry, right? Just, I mean, this is a ministry, especially now that it's been combined, that has to look after a significant portfolio. So that was something that you guys had to kind of shape the house, put the house in order first, right?
Put the house in order, exactly. Mm. So we actually did a lot of auditing work as well because there were a lot of big contracts that came to us and they were, you know, I don't know how they were procured in the past. So we had a Tan Sri Amrin who was heading this task force and he came in. Exactly. So he came in with a task force and they audited some of the big contracts that we have. And we haven't shared this with the public because it's still undergoing. And also, you don't want to air your dirty laundry, right? Because you are now the minister, you are now leading this ministry, you want to clean the house, but you want to make sure it's done properly before you share it with the public. So we haven't quite shared a lot of the inside work that we have to do, reforming and restructuring the ministry.
Can we talk a little bit about that the work that goes into policy formulation? Because you have to start somewhere, right? So you start with, say, a task force and they come up with their recommendations and then you review those recommendations. You look at how it can be implemented within the system that you have. Walk us through the difficulties in implementing real structural reform in the education system.
Yeah. And I think it also doesn't help that, you know, we have a diverse population who has different needs and wants for the education system. They all have different vision, right? So the reason why we created some of these task forces, they are independent, not by the government, because we wanted it to be a consultative process. So we wanted the policies not to be decided by one person, but also a group of people who are experts in their field. But they also then held town halls to get the public's opinion about what should be done as well.
So tell us about the National Education Review Task Force.
Yes. Mm. So we set up this task force about a year ago, and they were given 6 months to come up with a report on what are some of the reforms that are needed in the education system, all the way from preschool to tertiary education. This is where we had 13 very capable, independent members of the public who are experts in different fields. So it's led by, Ibrahim Bajunid. So it's led by Ibrahim Bajunid and Dr. Madeline Burma. And they were looking at very different areas of education system. And from the task force, they actually came up with 300 over recommendations to the ministry on what are some of the reforms that are needed. And some of them include really big things like teacher licensing. So how do we improve teacher quality? We need to, you know, get licenses for teachers. Mandatory preschool, for example. Preschool is not mandatory in this country and it's affecting the learning outcomes of children when they enter Standard 1. So that's also part of the recommendation. But obviously these recommendations, because they're so big and require a lot of resources, will need to be really thought through, right? So after the task force sent in the report, we had to do a series of labs to make sure that the implementation is viable. So in this series of labs, we went through the resources that are needed. We actually consulted teachers and students as well on what they think of these recommendations. Mm-hmm. So it's a long process of also aligning interests and aligning people's thoughts on this, and then really then come up with a very solid plan. So we're still in the midst of that, actually.
Right. Okay. Well, when you say we are still in the midst, you mean... Well,
right.
What, you
wouldn't no longer
in the midst.
Me, yes.
Yeah, you wouldn't be in the midst. But okay,
the ministry.
But what's interesting is the National Education Review comes out with recommendations. Now, how much of that process do you think was made visible to the public?
Consultative?
Could not be, in fact, made visible just because it was still a work in progress?
Yeah, yeah. So I think when we received the report, we actually debated about this. Should we release the report to the public so that they know what other stuff that has gone into making this, right? But we also realised that it would be quite irresponsible as policymakers if we don't actually know how we're going to implement some of these recommendations. And we haven't really thoroughly, you know, kind of really examined them. So I think we then realised that, you know, we needed to do all, I mean, they, now the ministry will have to do a lot of this work beforehand, mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you implement the policies overnight, then there will be consequences, right, that you have not thought of before.
Right, yeah, so you don't want to kind of have knee-jerk reaction and then implement and then go back and find out, well, we could have done it better.
Yep.
So you want to
Yeah.
give it enough time. All right, we're going to continue this conversation with Swetly shortly after these messages. We'll be right back on Consider This. Thanks for staying with us on Consider This. Melissa and Sharad here with you tonight. We're talking tonight to Liu Swet Lee, former policy officer for Dr. Mazli Malik. She's giving us a behind-the-scenes look at how education policy is formulated in the office of Dr. Mazli when he was education minister. Now, just before the break, Swet Lee, you talked a little bit about how you were kind of halfway looking through the reform recommendations,
yeah.
And then Dr. Mazli tendered his resignation.
And then you and the team had to resign
as well. Okay, so that speaks to me that education reform takes a long time to think through, to formulate, to implement.
Mm-hmm.
Were you and your team put under extreme pressure from the public, from a very impatient public,
mm-hmm.
And did that affect how quickly you felt like you needed to implement policy from
yeah.
the office?
And I think just now I mentioned a little bit on the diversity of the public, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that puts a lot of pressure because we don't know exactly what the public wants because there's so much different competing voices. And some of these voices are actually in direct conflict with each other as well. So what do we actually do? Because everybody wanted different things. So yeah, definitely there was a consistent pressure that we felt.
There was pressure.
Yeah, there was definitely a consistent pressure that we felt because I mean, a lot of the things that we want to talk about, like in terms of autonomy and quality, like how do you really break that down in language that is relevant to people? Because when you ask people on the street, right, like what do you want to change in terms of education system, 9 out of 10 actually would say that the curriculum should be changed. But what is really the curriculum? The curriculum is merely the framework, right, and the textbook, that's it, the syllabus. But there's so many other things that we need to look at as well. Institutional reform, for example, the school environment, for example, teacher quality, those are not curriculum. So it's hard to also kind of balance what we think is the right thing to do, but also kind of like how do you educate the public that these are other things that are also important as well.
Mm. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the successes from your point of view, mm-hmm. of the Mazli Malik tenure as Minister of Education.
Yeah. So I mentioned a little bit about the phases of reform earlier, right? So we realized that in order to really introduce new policies and, you know, things like quality education, we need to first remove barriers. And we saw a lot of barriers in the education system, one of which is the concept of equity, right? So there's still a huge gap between the have and have-nots in this country, whether it's rural school and urban schools or even students from B40 backgrounds. So one of the big priority that we had was to make sure these inclusive policies were implemented first. So I think he had a heart for special needs, and that's the first thing that we did. We made sure we implemented zero reject policies, and to ensure that schools will now have to have special needs classroom for kids who have special needs. So I think
who
from
previously would have been rejected.
Yes, exactly. Mm. So from this policy, I think last year alone we saw an increase of like 5,000 to 6,000 students who were otherwise not in school to come who are now in school. So I hope that increases every year. And we also did the same for students with no documents. So students who didn't have ICs were previously not registered in school. We saw dropouts as well. So these are students who are marginalized, right? Students who are not, people are not really thinking about them. So we're trying to bring them back to school first. So the concept of equity and inclusive policy was the big thing that we had. But on top of that, I think one of the big achievements that we had was also taking away exams for Senate 1, 2, 3. I think that deserves a lot more spotlight than it did.
Right.
Because what does that mean, right? Because we wanted to make sure that education is supposed to be fun at such an early age. And if you really want critical thinking, you want collaborative, you want all these skills, you can't be making 7-year-old kids taking exams. And that's something that we were very sure that will impact the parents. And
well, 7-year-olds were voters, I think, Nazi, would still be,
well, it's true.
Still
I
be
mean,
in cabinet.
I completely agree. That was one of the, I guess, highlights of Mazli's tenure as education minister. But, you know, when you're highlighting all his achievements, Swetli, I'm just wondering now, where was the failure then? Was the failure in your communication team in translating this to be really put under the spotlight? Was it a failure of the media? Mm. Was it a failure of the public in understanding? In hindsight, what do you think?
I think in hindsight, we definitely could have done a lot better in educating the public of why this is important policies. It may not affect everybody because it's affecting mainly the marginalized community, right? But why is that important to begin with? Why is closing the gap important in eventually improving the quality of education? Maybe we also didn't do a really good job at explaining that. But I also wish the media would really kind of pick on these issues a bit more and kind of explain to the public that these are important stuff that is important to the country as well. So I feel like maybe, you know, all of us could have played a better role in explaining and really just explaining the impact of these policies.
Well, media for reform is another huge issue. I'm not quite sure who's going to champion that. But let's look at policy formulation capacity, because that's a big problem across ministries. How is there, you've got an insider view, mm-hmm. is there capacity for policy formulation of quality global standards? Your work at the master's level is looking at a comparative perspective. Do we have civil servants that can do this?
Definitely. So from, you know, I work very closely with the civil servants, and there's a whole team that does just this, right? Comparing different systems and so on. But I see the pressure that they face as well, because every minister, like I said, every minister that comes in will want new things, and all their work that is based on evidence will be for nothing if the minister doesn't want that to be the forefront of the policy that he wants to achieve. So I think they were also under that pressure of, like, you know, changing ministers and then pleasing, because it's very hierarchical in the ministry. Whatever the minister says goes.
Wow.
So that's actually a problem that I see the civil servants face.
Well, the current minister now is the Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, is now acting Education Minister, right?
Until he actually chooses the new minister.
Temporarily, so he says. All right, well, Swetli, what do you expect now that he is the acting Education Minister? What are you expecting out
of
Mahathir?
Do you see continuity? Yeah. The good work that you say Mazli did, will it continue?
So we all knew what the Prime Minister wanted. He was very clear from the very beginning that there are only three things that he really wants to see in the education system. And that's English and science and math. That's less religion in school, or at least more values-based education in school, as opposed to just rote learning in terms of religion, and more technology in the classroom. So these are the three things that he wanted us to achieve actually in our time as well. And I'm not surprised if these are the three priorities that he has. But I really wish as well he will also focus on higher education, because there are a lot of things that we have put in place, the foundations that we have put in place. For example, we are thinking of rewriting the whole AUKU law as well, which is why we have the whole task force that will be looking at this, and TVET as well. So I'm not sure if that will be his priority. Mm. I'm definitely sure that these are the three things that
Well, you know that these are the three things, right? Yeah. So do you feel like during Dr. Mazli's time that he gave enough attention to those three things?
Yeah. Internally, yes, we definitely spoke about them a lot, but they are really easier said than done. So for example, English in science and math, right? That was a huge political issue for years, for a decade, actually since PPSMI was introduced. And there was a lot of back and forth policies as well in terms of this. So there were a lot of talk inside, and we had to resurface all the evidence when that happened as well, when PPSMI policies were in place, to really research properly, were they actually impactful to the students? So while we were doing all of that, like, that would take a while. But yeah, we were having those conversations, but it was difficult.
All right, well, unfortunately, that's all the time that we have tonight. Unless, Sharad, a quick question if you want to ask.
Yeah, so your team has been disbanded. Those task force on National Education Review, they finished their work. The TVET and AUKU, are they also disbanded?
No, I really hope not. So they have not finished their work. For example, the AUKU task force have just submitted their policy papers for better governance and for academic freedom and so on. And they're actually really worried that if there's no continuity to their work, it means all the work that they've done for the last 1 year will be for nothing.
Well, let's hope that that's not the case then. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here on the show and providing us an insight into what goes behind the scenes in the Ministry of Education. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the show tonight. I'm Melissa Idris, with me, Sharad Kutan, signing off. We'll be back with you on Monday for another episode of Consider This. Good night. Thank you for watching and have a great weekend.